this is another letter of Maisie Gonal. She's a teacher in a school, and it's a rough school, and she's a posh lady, and she has to adjust to it. Now, some of the kids sometimes don't turn up, or they leave school. They run away. So in this episode, the parents, some of the parents actually come to sit in the classroom with the children to ensure they don't run away. And Maeve writes to the principal. Dear principal, I am back with 3A2. The parents have decided to stay in the class for a week or two until their children have settled in again and don't wish to run away anymore. It's a good thing, actually, because the three of them are almost illiterate and could use some work with their reading and writing. I suggested initially that each parent sit beside their son in the hope that they would help each other. But unfortunately, after hearing several loud cracks as the parents slapped their offspring across the face, I realized that things weren't going to work out. Since then, I have separated them, and things are a bit quieter. I have put one parent beside Kevin, who is the best worker in the class. I am hoping that some of his diligence will rub off onto Mrs. Burke, and that she might make some progress. I do hope she starts behaving herself. Honest to God, she's worse than the children. I am trying at the moment to expand on the notion that physical violence is not the solution to every difficulty. Mrs. Burke is making this very difficult. I find I'm having the urge to place my hands myself around her neck and squeeze until the bell. She's quite a large lady, you know, and there is barely room for Kevin in the desk. At the moment, he is clinging on for dear life like he were falling from a lifeboat. Mrs. Elizabeth Burke. She's proving a great asset in the class, however. Ever since she flopped in, it was like a miracle. You know, the mountain moving and all that. If anyone misbehaves, I now threaten them with a long stint sitting beside her, and they all grow silent immediately. It's working a treat. I'm thinking of putting on weight myself in the light of this experience. Slab is fab. This is my new motto. The slightest move from Mrs. Elizabeth Burke, and the little pupil beside her will drown in a sea of cellulite. I put Alan Goldman sitting beside her. He is nicknamed Porky because he's overweight too. He's over the top too, and seems to like singing and dancing in the class aisles to amuse his friends. He thinks I can't see him because I'm turned towards the blackboard, but I know what he's up to because he's so large he blocks the light and casts a huge shadow over the board. I'd lock him in the cupboard, except he's too big and there's no room. And there's really not enough room in the class for both him and Mrs. Burke, but that's what makes it fun. I'm going to call them Porky and Beth. I think it adds a touch of culture to the class, which reminds me of the upcoming school musical, of which more in my next correspondence, Yours Renewed, Maybe Gonal, P.S. Gonna Move Mountains.
And by pure coincidence, we're following with another Sweeney. We're delighted and privileged to have Matthew Sweeney.
I'm going to read two pieces. The first goes back to some years I spent in Romania. And I was living in Timișoara. This is based on something I noticed that the gypsies were doing in Timișoara. And there's a Romanian word here, suca, which is a clear spirit made from sun, very like the Serbian spirit, you know the Serbian one. Anyway, the slow story of no. Sing us a gypsy song. Set the accordion going. Get the tsuika flowing. Invite us to sing along, making it up as we go. but following you as you tell in a Carpathian howl the slow story of no. No more cities on the grass next to the bottle bank. No mustachioed men to thank for clearing the rusty mess. No, it happened organically, like a mouse corpse rotting. No heads were plotting. The wheels rolled away. The doors and windows walked. The leather seats flew over the morning dew. No bystander gawked. The engine gave a creak and wrenched itself up to float like a spaceship into another week. And the chassis that remained let wind blow through it, let children climb on it, while old men complained, and no thin gray horse, hello horse, chomped grass until his trailer was full, with nothing of course, and no Mercedes on the grass, the slow story of no. And I was reading in summer about the siege of Paris and the siege of Derry, and how when you're in a besieged city, you've got nothing to eat. So I saw menus for the restaurants of Paris when the Prussian army was around, and rat features prominent. The suckling pig. The suckling pig came flying over the wall of the beleaguered city. It was still warm. The smell drew a crowd of armed men, followed by crying women. The boys roasting fat rats on spits let them burn. A hand reached for the leg of the piglet, but was sliced off by a long sword. Shouting rose in pitch to a hullabaloo, which was stabbed into stillness by a voice saying, "Only the governor gets to eat it. Him and his wife and maybe the reverend, it would hardly feed more anyway." The governor stood there in his white hat. He poked the pig with a finger, licked this and looked at his wife, while the reverend blessed what they were going to consume. "What if it's poisoned?" said a boy who was shushed. A soldier took a dagger from his belt, wiped it on his tunic, cut off a juicy chunk and devoured it. He grinned hungrily at the governor, who beckoned to the man to carve all and distribute it to the three. The besieged citizens stared and stared.
Thank you, Mr. Next up, please welcome Sarah Buckley. It's quite simple form, but lines of consideration. I never needed to touch you. I never noticed that before, but I guess when I was looking in your eyes on Skype and laughing as we planned our next reunion, it was touching of sorts for that anyway. I never needed to dare to smell you, because that sense is so imprinted in my mind that I have the joy of indulging it whenever. I adored your hugs, but I never needed them. I could throw on your t-shirt and just to sleep happy in the sensation that you were wrapped around me. I didn't need to see a smile. When I rang you a van of those from Havana Burns last night, I could hear the smile in your voice and I knew you were glad. I loved when I finally got to see you at the end of each month. I'd stay up excited all night, painting my nails, perfecting my hair, just getting ready to love how I looked. I know I didn't need to. And the letters I used to write to you in the Blue Library, where I was supposed to be designing a website or learning some system, something or other, I'd go get a big envelope in the shop instead and throw all your favourite tweets in. You'd call me excited but scolding because, well, you'd say you really didn't need to. And as the months lapsed, it's true to say we felt that we had plenty and the distance really never did leave us needing.
not until you change the, until you do that distance, to make that distance read, and they tried in vain to convince you that you really didn't need to, because finally there was a need. I'd lost you, and I need to not have.
Next up, please welcome Aoife.
I introduce this by saying that sometimes when something really weird or strange is going on, you find yourself you really don't have the words. You're actually trying to find a way to actually put something into language, and it actually is a real struggle. And I think that in many ways that's what poetry is about, is trying to put into words something that's really hard to actually even fathom or even find a word for. The weirdness that's going on right now with me, in any way, is that I'm going to have a baby in the new year.
Oh my God!
And I guess it's like this is an attempt to put into words the weirdness that is going on with me beneath my ribcage. It's called These Baby Bones. It's like a cluster of growing bony seaweed. Like a Rubik's Cube with knobbly protrusions. Like a sack of soft stones. Fish swimming around inside me. Small goldfish. Like a baby giraffe with long knuckly legs that are folded up. Like a calf or something. Calf shins or something. Like a hard cabbage. A heavy cabbage that fizzes. Like a stretched barrel of rubber bands. A koala bear with its hands crossed and his elbows sticking out. Like a trout hitting me with its tail. A kitten trying to get out of its paws. A small kitten clambering up a slippery slope and sliding down again. I can feel the paws, the little hand paws. Like a crocodile with a long mouth sending bubbles out. And this is where I just have to say, the word kicking, like a baby kicking, does not do justice to the weirdness of what goes on. It's so much more weird and it has not been described. And the closest that I can come to is that it's something like the muscular convulsion of a snake swallowing an egg. If you can imagine something like that going on inside you. It's like a sheep. It's like having a lot of big, fluttery heartbeats. Enlarged, engorged heartbeats. Like an animal with horns going out of it. A reindeer. It's a grisly feeling, like cartilage. Like carrying a shopping bag full of sand. Like a toad under a bed of semi-hard mud, and he's moving around under the mud, shifting the mud above him and sending bubbles to the surface. It's like a horse's ear flicking back and forth. Like a bag of sickly material. Like carrying around two shopping bags full of water, bulging at the bottom. Like a rabbit, boxing me with boxing gloves, with very sharp jokes. And finally this week, it's like a saucepan full of water that's boiling and moving the lid up and down. Like a saucepan full of popcorn, popping the lid up and down. Thank you.
That's so exciting, and she's a teal to show it off. Very good. So, next up, please welcome Patricia Walsh. This is part of a friend of mine who went to London, and
He went to see the actual division of longitude and South Wales meantime. And there was a dispute between French and the Royal English of where the division should be. And the English won it. And if you go to Greenwich and Village here, you see there's some big luminous line, imaginary line, that is imaginary line. Yeah, where zero, to the knowledge of zero, right. So, this is called fighting over longitude. Grandiose it was, sophisticated it was not. The eyeball switched to heaven and pumped the state of the planet by way of weight and measures. How will you fare to master the self-fulfilling prophecy of failure, even before the battle has begun? Treating its submission, smart bombs of creation, of nuclear summer spreading everywhere. There is a small question of eating and being eaten, of lying on a shag pile long after the treasure is gone. The longitude of the world is being defined by a luminous blue line. Somewhere in London, I need to think it is. This was a treasure once fought over, right down to either the last inch or centimetre, according to your own hardened opinion. Small measurements ache, creating stylized feats of engineering, have taken up with precision. A little to the left, maybe. No to the right? Perfect. And the next one on a more uplifting tone is called Suicide Watch. The sunlight chinks through the insecure curtains. A swan song imploring, try again. Half for the day arrives, suffocating any notion of getting out of bed. The shadow of my nurse is my only friend and enemy all at once. Now wanting what I want. Just perpetual silence, burning that eye to the footfall in the corridor of a shock. Emaciated, hungry for lost food, wrenching the obvious from my eyes, and my father would help you, I can, but I know I should not in advance. The sunlight breaks the ornament that covers noise heading into the doorway, so the credit card side is threat. But life must go on regardless of the crunching hands of time that are setting the seagulls flying towards them.
Patricia, thanks very much. Good on you. Okay. Next up we have Roy. Please welcome him.
This is about a place that I lost a long time ago. I was going to write, but I'm uninspired, lazy, and out on the road again looking for a Western Chinese meal sweetened to my palate, which by its upbringing has led me here to a place where there is no darkness. I, falling out my urges, find myself at a cheap imitation Buddha place where tea is served in £1 dark plastic glasses and people asleep on their meals, allowing me free dining in 4 a.m. mornings after all day ravages through pills and drink and endless Western drinking nights. Unexpected in clubs light with dreamers and workers and studiers all out to have a good time from the Doctor magazine descriptions, not showing an essence that we will fall victims of the unexpected force upon me. So I'm here. Here I am, endlessly lost and longing to sleep, but not able to draw myself away from this night, friend-filled and free, not but sight of a coming morning in 5 years' time when I would urge myself to have freed myself in these nights like Kerouac in the Beats and Heroes of Old. Those read about it through erudite magazine articles that make me feel insecure, more so than the picture of handsome modern men with no fat and square unscarred chins and fashion consciousness. I listen in my world to the things I should have done, the things that were not said when they would have been listened to by spirals of night singing soul in my ear. I have lost my way, wildly tried to find it. Cliched, I sit friendless and shy. I see you carrying your guitar, its case worn by your hair and your thighs. Dark leather tights keeping you warm as your soul drifts out across the street to my eyes. The stop me in the street with your song, please, I urge you. But I am held off to another and walk soullessly by, by. I know that you could fall in love with this old man, endlessly trying to retire and die happy and with wine and hermitude in the country. But he makes every effort not to speak with the people of this world because he feels in the nighttime, lifetime, that he is always outside and homeless. I do see my home. The hills have drawn off into the sky and cut up the horizon, and the sea would lap against its brow, and the moon or sun glistens with stars to show me off to the world. I feel lost without the sea. I have nowhere that can find me with you, and I long to be freely travelling to your horizon, your camp, the smell permeating upwards and through my hungered nostrils to energise me, to provide me with soul again. I am contradiction, happily and forgivingly, at least to myself. I am calling out inside to unbalance it, to show himself again and take me off to the world I belong to. It has been gone out my life for too long, and my wishes are with autumn now. Her hair pervades my sight, and I am falling desperately again out to a world of adoration and aggressive love. I have not in my world felt this urge, my dreams following us out to place together in sweet we have lived through our turmoil, and unhappy in bed, alone and unforgiving, our children gone and living. It is simple that I can see through her face that she could be a mate, a lifelong friend.
Well done, Rowan, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing more from you in the future. Next up, please welcome Rab.
Hi, how's it going, a couple of things that have interested me in the last couple of weeks. This is from a book called Burning Books and Levelling Libraries, which you can get in the library. It's probably the longest sentence I'm going to say today. As modern secular societies have used text to bolster national identity and build national libraries and archives that stand as monuments to the nation's strength, libraries have become increasingly attractive targets. And with increasing frequency, extremist regimes have attacked libraries during war precisely because they understand the role of these institutions in sustaining cultural vitality, national identity and pride, and the will to resist outside aggression. I just like that. This is a 13th century troubadour song. I'm not shitting you, but it is. So, through the eyes, love attains the heart. For the eyes are the scouts of the heart. And the eyes will reconnoitering for what it would please the heart to possess. And when they are all in full accord and firm, all three in one resolve, at that time perfect love is born. From what the eyes have made welcome to the heart, no otherwise can love either be born or have commencement than by this birth and commencement moved by inclination. By the grace and by command of these three, and from their pleasure, love is born, who with fair hope goes comforting our friends. For as all true lovers know, love is perfect kindness, which is born, there is no doubt, from the heart and the eyes. The eyes make it blossom, the heart matures it, love, which is the fruit of their very seat.
Thanks a million, Rob. Next up, we have Dawn Harding.
I'm a passionate craftsman and said the way to see the way that Orsidius had pleasure since the tiger we started.
What start?
Tiger.
Glory.
The Celtic, sorry.
Dead now.
Dead then.
Probably a kid.
Which then ironically called Milan. The Lord Mayor has just walked on the street again, stark naked. I intended choking out, but to check myself. My job could be lost, but maybe I was seeing things. After all, no one took umbrage. Business carried on. There was nothing for it but to ask someone important why this should be. I spied a butcher sharpening his knife. He's a good man, he said. Gave his old clothes to the poor. That new suit he is wearing, people say, is all the rage over in Milan. And this one is called Little Athens. The Cork was known as Little Athens in the 19th century because there were so many brilliant people living in the city. And
she's a Cork woman.
Painters, sculptors, writers, intellectuals. They all went to London, apparently.
Or Johnny Draw.
Well said, Matt.
Little Athens. I forgot to say this, when I went to Athens, at the entrance of the city, we actually took photographs of the right at the entrance where the road went in. We were taking photographs of the ground, the very gateway where the wagon wheels left the ruts at the entrance to the city. We put our fingers down on the shiny markings, touching the very stones they passed over into the city. And they defended it, that city. How they defended it. Great nations from the east would not overcome it. The Demos in the Agora saw to that. There was power in the humble Abstracta then. Rulers had the neck to listen. Now with jars, they only listen less. There was a time when my city was known as Little Athens, after frustrated men had settled down elsewhere and made a difference. The benevolence of those who stayed was great. Their munificence was humble. Streets were named after them. Their charisma resonated. Now, no one comes to these gates, north or south, to ask, where are your green marks? Where are your shining stones?
Next up we have Cat Cutter.
Excuse me.
Patrick.
My station is Patrick Cutter.
Sorry. You won't.
Okay, the woman this poem was written for is aged about 38 now. The caveat to this poem is that it was written when I was half the age that I am now. Which only goes to show what a great future I once had before me. Portrait of a Young American Girl, Dusseldorf, 1987. Remember sitting comfy on the ground of the crowded, cobbled Altstadt street. The roasting fowl and Heine's found favour with our noses, which moved our feet to hasten us to ask for one whole sapid bird. That chicken's tang still lingers on my tongue as I recall a later time, same place, a third chick settles herself down and runs her arms around me like a flourish weed, swirling the bowl of clapped out oak. A drunken mouth has been up, full of greed, sits quietly between her teeth, not coke but malt whiskey, vintage seat in peace. The cooling breeze erected a neglected teeth. That afternoon, nasty youths with shaven heads, fingers behind ears resembled fool's crown, didn't quite goose-step or hop or cluck, but spread their limbs awkwardly in some drunken strut. Frowns had no effect on their comportment. No Turks or Greeks about, they jeered at us who shared whiskey with the mouth. We were assholes fucking Jew cock sucking non-Aryan streets. Her naked belly button became more rhythmic to arouse those fascist pricks to advertise what they couldn't touch. Nor could I. She gave me more to drink, but not from the same cup the Rolands drank. No such high schoolish luck. She was about 16, I think. Her hair was corn-colored, her irises green. My drunken attraction for her was, I know, obscene. In a mirror, her eyes known no wrinkles. Only in a lover's face, her favorite crinkly. Her name for aging, sugar daddies, and eyes see sticks of kissable honey where recent ankles mean. She tells me, to him, my tiny teeth are gobstoppers. His real name's Herbert. My irises are bull's eyes. My bodily dirt is sweetest shirt.
Thank you, Patrick. And as you can see, he's booked on sale up here as well. Next up we have Dermot.
He came down from the mountain, a light in his eyes, and all the conceit of his convictions. He's gone to the shore now, but he talked too much. His bones turned to iron in his mouth. And returning from the coast, lo, that muse becomes flesh, enfolds him with her arms. She keeps the fire, gates traveling still, across the contours of her body, wandering in peace, home at last, for a little, or a little yet. Somewhere on dirty the plan, near where the grail was discovered with a metal detector, midsummer up them loony lines, Mr. Boy lunches out his harp. His feathers clipped, he springs from branch to branch, mumbling to himself, nibbling watercress, a passing presence, neither man nor beast pay any heed. Given a choice, we take the scenic route, pulling in at a super lounge in the back of beyond, only to be ambushed by sentiment. Old dear at the mic brings a tear to me eye, sends a shiver down my spine. Pure sugar can have that effect when some people sing. My home is a broad church. From southern Styx to midland bog to east coast towns clustered around their spires and crossing the pond to those working men's clubs and all that northern soul, laughter listed like litter breathing along dim, damp, after-hour streets, Motown resounding down the middle of the road, carried in our step. The frontier calls, their masters answered. So many, cleansed from this small patch, shipped to new worlds, buried in mass graves, taking their music with them, but for what survived of a magic enemies. The ambiguity of a lament, sadness and pleasure hand in hand, a cool beauty, consolation taken from another's grief, distant, anonymous, and yet so real. Our backs to the Atlantic, opening to the east, nations in denial, monarchies still in place, the old imperial club, cold homeland hiding under the shadow of its own enlightenment, their circle of yellow stars, a flag of convenience, a crown of thorns for fortress Europe. Slept through the Celtic twilight, woke up much later, only to fall in love with a weather girl on TG4. Balmy summer nights, squatting a stable in some exile's backyard after a very long day. Our little visitors are bedded down at last in their nest under the eaves, and we will wake, but we won't rise with their chatter when they begin again. For now, there is work to be done, a ceremony to perform, feast to consummate. Suck your tongue to taste the truth, the fishy smell of forbidden knowledge. A Fender Strat laid out, guitar at the crossroads. The devil gets my soul, but I got the bargain. Late August, down the Foxglove Glen, deep in the bracken, our bush be bushing until a stray horse chews half the prance. Meanwhile, back in the capital of culture, it's a gala evening, glitterati gather, bouncers in black, bullies deployed to save the herd from itself. I mean, an abused Alsatian might at least expect to live its life out in a yard, but look at these martial artists making their living in doorways. Some same types, cool late night venues, swagger at the entrance, flaunting walkie-talkies in baseball cap or dicky bow, some in both, wearing their contempt like a badge of pride. Pumped and iron, steroid jocks, killed before, and they will kill again. Returning to Barrack Street, Hooley gets out of hand, develops into a full-blown free-range tailie. Spills out the door, sets on the road, motorists hoot their approval. These little triumphs, not far out, but in a here and now that really was, made the world a kinder place. Remember that, neither anointed nor marked, but blessed in another way, mannered, talented, however you end, wherever you go, you will be recognized by kindred spirits, by other free souls. Totaled at Toyota, buried in a bridge, managed to push it clear before flaking out. Cops gripped me off the road, and they won't believe I was the driver. Far too gone, pal, you are covering for a mate. So charge me, I said, and charge me they did, like two fucking bulls. Trust Grandad, there are no fairies. Exiled by rural electrification, that giant's the same. But you won't need no guardian angel when you have friends like mine. Gobbles and gobs, neither roar, shout, cough, nor snort, but an unnerving ruminative rumble rattling round the glen, half bellow, half gargle. We were there, you weren't. Immortalized from the heights to great converse across the ages. Somewhere around Coleraine, somewhere around Coleraine. At large, at a loss, in a formica bar, in a concrete bunker, mouth at the mic, flying it to death. And oh, I wish I was back home in Kerry.